and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm your host, Archana, a research analyst at ISAS. 15 countries, including all of ASEAN, plus Australia, China, Japan, New Zealand, and South Korea, signed the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, dubbed as the largest free trade agreement in history on November 14th in Hanoi. To tell us more about the implications, we have with us today Dr. Amitendu Palit, a senior research fellow and research lead of trade and economics at ISAS. Dr. Palit, welcome back to South Asia Chat.
Thank you so much, Archana. Pleasure to be here with you all today.
Let's start with the India issue with respect to RCEP. Last year, India walked out of the deal. Now, is India really better off without RCEP? Could you also tell us some of the current concerns for India despite walking out of RCEP?
India walked out of RCEP on very specific grounds, in the sense that this was exactly a year ago at the ASEAN summit, at the final round of RCEP negotiations, that Prime Minister Modi announced that India could not continue to stay engaged with the RCEP because of specific domestic concerns. Now, there has been a number of domestic concerns in terms of India not getting the kind of deal that it wanted with respect to the commencement of the tariff cut schedule. India wanted the baseline year to be advanced much further, which the other countries were not willing to. There was also an issue of liberalizing market access for the dairy sector, which has continued to remain a complicated situation. But I think by and large, the overriding discomfort for India with respect to RCEP was being part of a trade agreement that includes China. Now, if we look at the way things have happened over the last 1 year, in a sense, India did not really have subsequently any other possibility of going back to the RCEP, because over the last few months, the India-China relations have actually reached their lowest point in recent history. And India has also not only individually begun taking economic measures for controlling Chinese investments and reducing Chinese digital presence in the country, but it's also become part of several multi-country coalitions that are looking to control the economic expansion of China in various spheres. If that is the overriding perspective as far as India is concerned, that it cannot agree to be a part of a trade agreement that includes China, then of course there's no possibility of India going back to the RCEP at a current point in time or sometime in the foreseeable future. With respect to the economic benefits and costs, I think this no longer for India remains a very relevant calculation with respect to the RCEP, because it's a possibility which it has decided to completely forego. It's almost non-negotiable for India. It is true that RCEP would have given India greater preferential access to a large number of markets over and above what it has right now. At the same time, there were fears that there would be increase in imports from the trading partners. But all those probably now are a bit speculative as far as India's prospects are concerned. But having said that, I think for the rest of the region, particularly Southeast Asia, RCEP has come out as a very positive development, particularly at a time when most of the regional economies are in a bad shape and developing Asia is encountering its first economic recession in the last six decades. However, I would also like to point out that much as the deal has been finalized and it has been signed, its operation will depend upon how the member countries individually ratify the deal. So we will have to wait and see how that progresses.
As we know that all ASEAN countries are involved in RCEP, now where does South Asia figure in the deal?
With the exception of India, there was actually no other South Asian country involved in the RCEP talks right from the beginning. And the reason for that is that RCEP developed as an ASEAN plus FTA, in the sense that the ASEAN group of countries has bilateral FTAs with a few other countries. And these include Australia, New Zealand, China, Japan, Korea, and India. So the RCEP was basically looked at as a combination of these countries, Southeast Asia, the 10 members of ASEAN, plus this six FTA partners that it already has. And it was constructed and proposed in that kind of a fashion that it would eventually take the structure of an ASEAN FTA, but it would only expand in the scope and coverage of the issues and market access concessions that its current FTAs give, and the RCEP will give concessions over and above those. So say, for example, if a particular ASEAN FTA has on an average 80% of the traded products under the tariff schedule for concession, the RCEP will try to expand that baseline to a level of, let us say, 90% or 92% for all the member countries. And the question of South Asia getting engaged in RCEP or any similar agreement at this point in time practically ends with India's exit. And in fact, there was a time when probably even Sri Lanka and Bangladesh were also taking interest in the way RCEP negotiations were going on. Interestingly, the RCEP is an agreement where one can define it as sort of an open-ended agreement, in the sense these are agreements where other countries can actually enter if they are willing to accept the conditionalities. So to that extent, this is not a closed agreement. And if there are countries of South Asia who want to become a member of the RCEP in future, they can apply. And if they are able to satisfy the conditions, then they will, of course, be a part of the deal. But whether any South Asian country outside of India at this stage is willing to consider that possibility or not also is going to be something interesting to look out for.
Dr. Palak, besides India, the US is another country that did not sign RCEP. Now, in the past, President Trump pulled out of a similar trade bloc, the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. What can we expect from Biden presidency with respect to both RCEP and the CPTPP?
This, Archana, is actually a very interesting development, because the RCEP has been made sacrosanct at a point in time when the US presidential election results have become available. And if everything goes fine, then one can expect in a few weeks' time the United States of America to have a new president. Now, what has happened in the region with respect to the US outlook on trade is actually quite interesting. You'd recall that in the years that had President Obama in the White House, the United States actually remained quite actively involved and engaged in the Asia Pacific. And as a part of that engagement, as you rightly mentioned, it proposed the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership was expected to be a counterbalance to the strategic and economic influence of China. To, in a sense, much as the two constructs might have developed separately, TPP and RCEP were actually being looked at as competitive constructs, in the sense that the TPP was being driven by the United States and the RCEP was being driven by China, though they may not be entirely correct notions to have. But once President Trump pulled the US out of TPP, the TPP in the form in which it exists today, which is the Comprehensive and Progressive Trade Trans-Pacific Partnership, it has 11 countries. And much as it includes countries like Japan and Australia and Canada, even Singapore, the sheer size of the bloc is not really commensurate with that of the RCEP. And that's primarily because of the RCEP containing China, the second largest economy in the world. But now that the situation has changed in the United States, there is a distinct possibility that the Joe Biden administration might actually again start looking at the Asia Pacific, which from an Indo-Pacific perspective now, as the US is choosing to define it, really requires an economic order or an economic architecture for counterbalancing China, because it is not just RCEP, but also the fact that over the last 1 to 2 years, China has started taking increasingly assertive positions in the region. There has always been the Belt and Road Initiative, but today, once the RCEP has come out, and this is in a time when the COVID-19 situation has seriously impacted regional economies. However, China is looking to do relatively well among the regional economies. So there is every possibility that China's economic clout will give it the advantage and flexibility to utilize the RCEP's rules of trade in a way which suits its advantage. And this is precisely what the United States would be wary of, that the rules of trade in Asia-Pacific are being dominated by China. So there is a possibility, however distant it might be, but there is a possibility that the Biden presidency makes a bid to take the US back to the CPTPP. And in that case, the CPTPP, by inclusion of US, would clearly become a fairly prominent counterbalance to China. The interesting part will be that both the RCEP and CPTPP will have several common countries. And this includes Japan, Australia, Singapore, Malaysia. So it's going to be an interesting situation that's going to emerge in the Asia Pacific if indeed that happens. And what might also be interesting to watch out for is that what does India do if such a possibility arises? And now that India is totally out of the RCEP and it is clear that it's not going to be a part of a trade pact with China, might India in that case be willing to consider the CPTPP as a possible trade option? And let's not forget the fact that India did have very strong reservations towards the CPTPP when it was being floated. But since then, a lot of water, as they say, have flown on the river, down the river. So let's wait and watch. That's also going to be something very interesting to watch out for.
Very interesting, Dr. Palit. But can we expect then for a trade bloc or like an alternate trade bloc to emerge through the Indo-Pacific partners, because, you know, US and India have expressed like, have come out of like RCEP or haven't signed the RCEP. So will Indo-Pacific really become like an alternate trade bloc?
You know, the US could not have been a part of the RCEP because, as I was explaining earlier, it was a collection of ASEAN and its FTA partners. So the US engagement was throughout with the TPP, and there is a distinct possibility again that the Biden presidency might look to get the US back into the thick of things in the Indo-Pacific through the CPTPP. Now the question over there is that for a country like India, the point that becomes very critical at this stage is that how does India look at trade engagement in the Indo-Pacific in the light of the changed circumstances? Now, as we know, there is a fairly pronounced degree of skepticism in India for quite some time over engaging in free trade agreements. There are a number of reasons which are, of course, the subject of a separate discussion. But I think the skepticism is getting reflected in a number of decisions that India has taken with respect to trade in the recent past, which include not just backing out of RCEP, but also the fact to critically review its existing free trade agreements with a number of other partners, including countries like Japan and Korea, with whom, interestingly, it is beginning to work in the Indo-Pacific, along with a number of other countries, in very significant efforts like repositioning of regional supply chains and shifting them out of the mainland China as much as possible. Now, this is where the Indian position sometimes senses the presence of contradictory signals. Like, while India is happy to work with Japan, Korea, the United States, Australia on initiatives like the Resilient Supply Chain Initiative, whether it is willing to actually join them in a trade bloc or not is not very clear. And if it does indeed agree to do so, then the most likely alternative is probably the CPTPP, because the CPTPP, interestingly, or the TPP the way it was, when the US pushed the TPP, it modeled it on the FTA that it had with Korea. Japan and Australia continue to remain members of the CPTPP. Korea is very likely to join the CPTPP in foreseeable future. Now, if the United States also comes back to the CPTPP, and let's not forget the agreement also includes Vietnam. Now, all these are countries who are friendly with India, with whom India is actually working on effective regional coalition building, keeping China in mind. So it's going to be a bit difficult for India to persist with the position that it will stay out of trade agreements because of pressing domestic concerns. I think that is where the challenge for India will be, to balance the national interest priorities arising out of external engagement and being part of larger strategic economic groupings, as opposed to positions being taken by certain domestic constituencies about staying out of trade agreements. So this is going to be a major policy challenge for India to overcome.
Wonderful insights again, Dr. Palit. But finally, before we conclude this, will RCEP accentuate a regional tilt in China's trade? And also, we'd like to know if Asia is emerging to be the center of global trade order.
The RCEP China question is actually now beginning to become much more prominent than it was in the past. And I think this needs to be looked at in view of the fact that today China's position, and even after COVID-19, much as some experts probably thought otherwise in the beginning when the pandemic broke out and China was the most affected country, I think as the months have gone down, for whatever reasons, it's become very clear that China has been able to recover from the economic setbacks caused by the pandemic much faster than before. And there are several indicators and parameters which are pointing to the fact that the rest of the world's engagement with China has not really been disconnected. The exports from China to the United States and vis-a-vis have not really fallen. China's exports to the rest of the world continue to remain significant, particularly at a time when alternative exports are not really very visible. India's imports from China, for example, have increased in a few sectors, which are explained by the specific characteristics of those sectors. But by and large, I think the presence of China as an economic factor in the Asia-Pacific region continues to remain very, very significant. And if that is taken to be the background and the guiding determinant, then China clearly is in a singularly preeminent position to utilize the RCEP, as I said, in a manner in which it fits its own national interest. That does not mean manipulating the RCEP or changing the RCEP conditions in any specific way, but simply taking advantage of the new market access liberalizations in a much more forceful fashion than other members, because China is in a position to ramp up its capacity faster, build up its production faster, respond to demand for imports from other countries faster, and at the same time, also ensure that it is in a position to absorb large number of imports from other members. To that extent, I think China clearly will turn out to be the biggest beneficiary of RCEP. Now, if that means that the RCEP, which right now is the world's largest free trade agreement with more than one third of the global GDP, is going to get a boost from greater participation of its member economies in regional trade, that is certainly a possibility, because an active China pushing ourselves, getting into greater engagement with the remaining members, has every possibility of creating new trade and investment. And if that happens, that's something which the region is actually looking forward to happening, then it might give the region a new shot in the arm, which it is looking for. Because as I mentioned right at the beginning, this is the first time that Southeast Asia is experiencing this kind of a widespread, broad-based economic setback with huge impact on the labor market. So if that happens, then yes, Asia clearly, or Asia Pacific to be more specific, will again be in a position to contribute very significantly to global economic and global trade recovery.
Indeed, interesting times ahead of us, Dr. Pallad, and a lot to watch out for. On that note, thank you so much for joining us today and for those wonderful insights.
You are very welcome, Archana. It was a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much.
Dear listeners, if you wish to know more about our work at ISAS, please visit www.isas.nus.edu.sg. Thank you so much for tuning in.